From the Moan Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, a lot of music and some music news. A new law that's awaiting Governor Newsom's signature could have dramatic consequences for thousands of California musicians. Then we hear from the LA band La Santa Cecilia about breaking down musical and cultural barriers.
I mean, since the beginning of the band, we always wrote inspired by life, whether it was talking about love or writing about going out dancing with our friends or deportation.
And the singer-songwriter Robin takes us inside the title track from her album, Honey. All that coming up on The Frame. An employment bill known as AB5 is on Governor Gavin Newsom's desk awaiting his signature. The measure would make it harder to classify workers as independent contractors, instead making them employees, thus eligible for benefits and pay assurances. It's intended to protect people who work in the so-called gig economy, like Uber drivers. But among the many other people who could be affected by the law are independent musicians. And there are a lot of them in California. Richard James Burgess is the CEO of the American Association of Independent Music. It's a coalition of record labels. And he told me about his concerns for California's music industry if the bill becomes law.
As it stands, anybody who uses anybody in any capacity to work on a record, for example, or a video, winds up becoming their employer, and not just in a 1099 sense, but in a W-2 sense, you know, they actually wind up being responsible for a lot of other parameters that normally you don't when you hire a freelance musician or a producer or engineer or stylist or makeup person or photographer or whatever. So it's very difficult for us to figure out how this can possibly work and how it even benefits the musicians or the producers or engineers. And I was a musician, I was a producer, I was an engineer. I've done all those jobs, and I actually really like being freelance. So I'm struggling to understand, you know, what this achieves.
One of the things that you mentioned in a op-ed that you co-wrote with some other people is the hypothetical of a young girl in her basement recording on GarageBand who invites a friend over to play bass, and now she becomes the employer. Is the state really going to police that? Are they going to show up at somebody's house and say you didn't fill out the proper forms, you're not paying retirement or Social Security? Or is that just kind of a hypothetical that is a hypothetical?
No, it's not really a hypothetical in the sense that the way it would work is that if a musician, artist, producer, photographer, whatever, whoever it was, suddenly decided at a later date that they weren't properly compensated or had some other grievance against the person that they worked with, they could file a complaint with the California Employment Development Department, EDD, and then there'd be an investigation and there could be a look-back period. So, you know, it could be pretty crippling for somebody working on GarageBand in their basement and bringing in a friend to play harmonica or a bass or something like that.
One of the inspirations behind the bill is the abuse of employees in gig economy jobs like ride-sharing drivers. Are there concerns at all that some people who work in music are treated in ways that don't really benefit them as employees? In other words, might there be some issues in the music business that some sort of legislation could help address?
It's possible. You know, we're definitely in favor of fair compensation for everybody. You know, I can't say that there are no abuses going on anywhere because, you know, almost certainly are. But this bill was originally conceived to solve the Uber, Lyft, Instacart, you know, type of problem. You know, you've got people driving all day long for a large company, primarily for one company, maybe two, possibly three, but certainly not many, many. So, you know, as a studio musician, for example, when I worked as a studio musician, I would work for certainly many dozens of people every year, different employers. So, you know, it's a very different world than being an Uber driver. I'm really not in favor of misclassification. There's very clear guidelines as to how you classify employees. You know, if you're told to show up at a certain place at a certain time and do certain work and, you know, can be dismissed in certain ways, those, you know, then you have to be classified as a full-time employee. We support that 100%. But this just basically makes everybody a full-time employee.
How many people are we talking about? How many dollars? How big is the business here, and are you actually afraid it will leave for other states?
I can say this. We have 600 labels as members of American Association of Independent Music, and 200 of them are based in California. But we're not only concerned about labels that are based in California, we're concerned about labels that work in California, and a lot do. I mean, I was having a conversation with someone this morning who was, you know, considering expanding a business in California and has now put that on hold because of this bill. So I think it's already having an impact. It's very hard to say exactly how it's going to go, but I can't imagine this is not going to diminish the amount of work that's being done in California because people don't want the risk.
Legislators were able to carve out exemptions for people like doctors, dentists, architects, investment agents, fishermen. What did they say to you guys when you asked for an exemption? Why didn't you get it?
Because the union opposed it, apparently. So, you know, we were told that we wouldn't get an amendment unless the union was, blessed it, and apparently they didn't, so we didn't.
That would be the AFM, correct?
I can only assume yes.
Is there any possibility that would allow for a delay in implementation so other fixes can be found? And do you think the industry can find a compromise along those lines?
I certainly hope so. You know, we've heard that there'll be a cleanup bill in January. We would like to get it fixed before that. We were hoping to get something in by last Friday, which was the original deadline for amendments, and then it became Tuesday night at midnight. And, you know, now I think the bill goes into law on Friday, so I don't think there's any chance of getting it before Friday. But yes, I mean, we're not going to stop on this because it's absolutely essential to our members. But more than that, it's essential for everybody. I mean, you know, this is, you've seen the music artists come together, the Music Artists Coalition with A2IM, the independent labels, with the RAA, which is the major labels. We're all of one accord here. This is not going to be good for anybody on the creative side, for sure.
Richard James Burgess is the CEO of the American Association of Independent Music. Richard, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for taking the time. I really, really appreciate it.
Coming up, the LA band La Santa Cecilia continues to defy genres on its new album. There's no patron saint for public radio hosts, even if some days I wish there were, but there is one for musicians. She's known as Santa Cecilia, and she's the namesake of our next guest, the members of the Grammy-winning quartet La Santa Cecilia. The LA-based band has an upcoming album that continues its genre-defying sound, bringing together elements of rock, soul, Mexican folk music, and even a bit of New Orleans jazz. Singer Marisol Hernandez and percussionist Miguel Oso Ramirez join me in studio. They recently performed at a concert in El Paso, organized as a response to the mass shooting in Texas last month.
It was an honor to be asked to participate in the event, and to be able to be there for the people of El Paso was a huge thing for us. Like many people, I think we all felt very impotent, and we all feel very impotent at the sight of these occurrences and these massacres. And to be able to be there and provide some upliftment and some, you know, a voice for the community, and to be a part of an event with so many amazing and inspiring activists was just a beautiful experience.
You also did something outside a detention center, is that right?
Yeah, we went outside of one of the detention centers, and we brought them some music. No, we came to sing some songs to the people that are detained, who are there for
processing,
being processed, mm-hmm. and with no actual date or anything, just in captivity, no? And in jail, and so we just wanted to go and show our support to them, and I'm not sure if they heard us. I hope they did. I tried to sing as loud as I could, but just to, I mean, even just to bring some positive energy, you know what I mean, to the place, my best way of showing my love and support, you know, to my community, to my brothers and sisters, is to go there, to sing to them, to share in a moment, no?
When you think about the kinds of lyrics that you are called to write, do you feel like it's changing? And do you find yourself drawn to different kinds of stories that you want to tell through song now?
I mean, since the beginning of the band, we always wrote inspired by life, by love, by real happenings, no? Whether it was talking about love or writing about going out dancing with our friends or deportations. You know, it's coming from a place of what's happening to us, of what we're going through. So, of course, it's changing because we're ever changing. And, I mean, we've been now together for 12 years as a band. We have children now. That's a whole other life for us. So, of course, our music, I think, and especially this new album is very much very personal and very much of what we're living and what we feel, no, and what we've been feeling.
I want to ask you, too, about your musical upbringing before you founded the band. How much Los Angeles was a character in that education? How much other bands were? When you think back to the kinds of music that shaped you, who would you cite and how do you recall those days?
Well, Marisol, I mean, your upbringing at Olvera Street, was...
yeah, singing on Olvera Street. My parents have been a huge inspiration on me. And music to musicians, no? I mean, I grew up listening to people like Mercedes Sosa, but equally listening to Ella Fitzgerald. And, you know, I love the Beatles, but I love Juan Gabriel too, you know? So I think growing up in a city like Los Angeles and my family and music are like my greatest inspirations. And I hope you can tell. I'm sure you can tell.
I mean, but LA definitely was probably the main character in the story of La Santa Cecilia because, you know, growing up, we would go see bands like Quetzal and Oso Motley, and we would go see the Black Eyed Peas and Blues Experiment and Quinto Sol and all these bands that were from the local scene that were, you know, doing original projects that were so inspiring for us to see that firsthand. And I remember we'd go to the Popular Resource Center in Highland Park and pay $5 and go see all these bands together in one show. And to me, it was like, man, I want to be a part of that.
Your new album is called La Santa Cecilia. And like a lot of your music, there are many influences that you can hear in any given song. I want to listen to a little bit of your rendition of Nobody Knows You When You're Down and Out.
But if I ever get on my feet again.
We talked a lot about Los Angeles. There's a lot of New Orleans in this as well. And there is a jazz group called the California Feet Warmers that you play with. Tell us about that collaboration and what you look for in musical partners and how, given all the influences you guys are juggling and inspired by, how you come up with a sound where it all comes together and things aren't fighting against each other.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, that came along, I think, more so through friendship more than anything. You know, we all hang out and drink and tell stories. And most of the time towards the end of the night, we end up playing music together. And, you know, the first time Marisol sang with them. And it's just like, it's magical because we all just love and admire one another so much. And again, it's an LA thing, man. Like, it happened here in LA. We're playing New Orleans jazz. We're doing these things that come together in a city where only it can come together here, you know, in LA, and it's very unique. But it's brotherhood, man. It's how we hang out. It's our good times, you know. It's our good times. It's how we live music and live friendship.
We're talking with Marisol Hernandez and Miguel Oso Ramirez from La Santa Cecilia. I want to play another song from your new record. This one is called Winning.
Hashtag thoughts and prayers. Can your soul be saved? Mimis, pinecone in the yard. So ready for this album to come out. Happy Year of the Pig from Young Mix. I can't find no inspiration. Never-ending information. Always stuck in purgatory.
It feels like a song about Twitter, Instagram, Snap.
It.
But it's also about, I think, how you judge yourself. I want to ask you about how this song came together and what you guys were talking about and thinking about when you wrote it.
I mean, I think this is our way of at least my way of saying, like, how we are so addicted, man, to social media, you know, like, and how distracting it can be and how superficial.
Wait, hold that thought. I got to check my Instagram feed. Okay, keep going.
Hold on, me too. I want to check my treats. I mean, I feel like we can barely pay attention. And I'm speaking for myself, man, you know, how hard it is to focus sometimes when you're thinking about this thing, you know, this phone, this platform, and how much it's a part of our life and of our work too, you know, being in a band and having to use social media as a platform, right? So,
yeah, connected and disconnected.
Yeah.
You guys have written songs that are really tied to the debate over immigration, and that's something that's real for you because I think you have an accordion player who's a dreamer, mm-hmm. and I think you had to do things when you're on the road to make sure that you didn't get in trouble. So when you're thinking about how you're telling that story and about how it relates to you and your band, it becomes incredibly personal too, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a song that we wrote as, you know, as a response to what we were living, but you don't realize growing up was such a part of our life, you know, for in our case being Mexican immigrants or Mexican Americans, and having that experience within the band, knowing that our bandmate couldn't travel with us when we started traveling and leaving the country. Even going to Texas, we used to have to take the I-40 instead of the 10 because you have to cross a big immigration point past El Paso. I remember calling a friend whose dad was an immigration officer and asking her to ask, you know, like, what's the best route? And he told me to go that way. And it was something that we did because we wanted to pursue our dream. We wanted to follow our dream, but it was a very real thing that we were living in. When we did write the song El Hielo, which is about the separation of families and the whole dynamic of what happens when someone gets deported, it was a huge release valve and so many emotions came out. And man, we were, you know, in D.C. playing in front of 150,000 people at huge rallies, and the song just meant so much to so many people, and that really changed our lives, really.
Uno se queda aquí, otro se queda allá. Eso pasa por salir a trabajar.
It was a big decision to put that song out because we knew that we would become very politicized as a band, and we would be looked at as a political band instead of just artists who make music. And that's not fair to artists sometimes, you know, but we thought that it was really important to do it, and we did it. And sometimes, you know, like this album, La Santa Cecilia, the self-titled album, is so about so many different things, not just that. It's about heartache and loss, and we went through a lot of things, and there's a lot of pain, and there's a lot of sweetness and love and togetherness on the album. And it's not necessarily that heavy on the political side, but you know, as an artist, I think the main thing is just to be able to be honest with what you're living in the moment. And if it's telling a political message, or if it's talking about love or loss, then that's what you talk about.
Marisol Hernandez and Miguel Oso Ramirez are from the band La Santa Cecilia. Their new record is called La Santa Cecilia. Marisol and Miguel, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
The album La Santa Cecilia comes out on October 11th. Up next on The Frame, a new episode from the podcast Song Exploder with the singer and songwriter Robin. About you. Now we have a fresh episode of Song Exploder, the podcast by our friend Hrishikesh Hirway. Today the guest is Swedish singer and songwriter Robin. Her 2018 album Honey was her first in 8 years. Rolling Stone and Pitchfork named it one of the best albums of the year. Robin breaks down the title track from that album. She traces the long history of how she made Honey, a song that the New York Times called her masterpiece.
My name is Robin. Me and Marcus, who's in my band, he had brought this little Casio synthesizer that I was messing around with. There was something wrong with that particular Casio, so that when you held these two buttons, it would glitch so that you could like separate the bass line out of these pre-recorded little beats. It sounds really cool just on its own. It sounds like this. I just kept that bit. We recorded it and I kept it. And then when I started writing again for this album in like 2015, maybe, I brought the beat out again. I was looking for like new ways to sing rhythmically because I was feeling kind of claustrophobic coming out of the music I had done before. Like, I mean, I love the music. That wasn't the problem. It was more like rhythmically, I wanted to like feel freer. I guess that was what I was working out during those months when I was in the studio by myself, just like rewire my own way of relating to rhythm. So I was in my studio trying like lots of different sounds and rhythms, freestyling on this beat. And I did for like 2 months or something. And then I remember one day I just found my way into a melody that felt much more natural than anything I had written on it before, which was... But down in the deep, the honey is sweeter. When I was writing this song, I think the feeling that I was going for was to find like some kind of healing for myself, a place where I could calm myself down. And that felt really good when I sang it. So I kept it, I recorded it and I kept it. And then I took it with me to the studio where I was writing with Klaus when I started writing together with other people.
And the sun sits on the water, but down in the deep, the current is stronger.
I think on this record, I started to sing in a different way than I had done before. I didn't want it to feel pushed or pressured in any way. I wanted it to just feel relaxed and soft. And I started singing differently and I started like discovering new kind of things that I could do when I just relaxed.
And the waves are coming and they're golden, but down in the deep, the honey is sweeter.
When I listen to the song, even though I've heard it so many times and sung it so many times, the line that still gets me is the line, but down in the deep, the honey is sweeter, because there's something about that that talks about, for me at least, like how when you kind of face yourself, or if you, you know, dig deep into yourself, there's like a sweetness that comes with that digging or the depth or the pain sometimes of like going deep into things. Not saying that it's a reward, because, you know, when you go through difficult things in life, like you don't always feel like it makes sense or that it's necessary or that you want to do it. But I think when I was writing this song, I was coming out of something that had been quite painful, and I knew that I had learned things from that and that I had maybe also been able to kind of come closer to something that felt like me, something that felt honest. And so the singing also was a part of like the healing process for me.
No, you're not gonna get what you need, but baby, you have what you want. Come get your honey.
I remember just getting stuck on the word honey. I don't know why I was so obsessed with that word. I thought it was funny that it meant honey, the way you call your lover, and this weird kind of interesting but a little bit disgusting substance that bees make. I think the intention of honey is like really good. Something I feel really happy about, you know? Happy that I found the space and that I explored it. I think my perspective on it has changed like several times, you know, but that's how it should be, I think. I still think that it's a healing song. And I also think that when Philippe Zadar, who mixed the song, died a month ago, that also changed it for me. Like right now, the song is like very, very emotional again because he's not here anymore. And, you know, I'm sure it's going to change again, you know? It's like, that's how it works with music. And I think the experience of making this song, you know, all the way from me, like, starting these early demos, spending all this time writing it and really trying to define this feeling, and then working with Joseph and Klaus and, like, redoing the vocals and the production, like letting it really take the time it needed to get where I wanted it to be, was really amazing. I'm really happy that I was able to follow that through the whole way. Just being able to record this freedom that I felt that the song was trying to describe.
If you want to hear a longer version of that interview, you can find it at songexploder.com. And that is it for today. Remember, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We're at The Frame. Remember, you can also keep up with us through our weekly email. It goes out every Thursday, and that's today. You can sign up at theframe.org/newsletter. I'm John Horn from the Moen Broadcast Center at KPCC. We're back here tomorrow.